Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kooner sitting in for the legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is taking a much-needed day off. This is Jeff Kooner filling in for Michael. Welcome to everybody. For those of you that don't know me, I do a weekly special report for the Savage Nation. I am a columnist at the Washington Times. I've also been a longtime editor at the paper. I am the president of the Edmund Burke Institute, a prominent Washington think tank. And you've my friends, I have to tell you what an honor and a privilege it is to speak to all of you tonight, and especially to be filling in for Michael Savage, to me, one of the greatest talk radio hosts ever, somebody who has transformed the talk radio industry and is literally, as I said earlier, a living legend. Michael, if you're out there listening, I really want to thank you for this wonderful opportunity. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in tonight. We got a jam-packed show for you. It's going to be sizzling. We're going to look at a lot of the hot issues of the day. But let me start off with really, I think, which is the preeminent issue right now in Washington, D.C. and across the country. Barack Obama yesterday announced to the country his first nominee to the Supreme Court, Sonia Sotomayor. Now, what Obama and the Democrats are now furiously trying to do is they are now trying to establish the fact that this judge is a moderate, they claim, somebody who is within the mainstream and the middle in terms of judicial philosophy. She is somebody who they are arguing demonstrates not only legal acumen and somebody with a profound judicial mind, but as Obama himself said, she demonstrates the empathy, the compassion, and the personal experience to become the next Supreme Court justice. Now, my friends, let's be very clear about this. I sympathize with Sonia Sotomayor. I really do. I am somebody who comes from a family of immigrants. I know what it is like to achieve the American dream, to come from hardship, to come from a working class background. The fact that this woman came from a single mother who obviously worked extremely hard to put her through school, somebody who worked hard, went to Princeton, went to Yale Law School, and made something of herself. She is a walking embodiment of the American dream. But that is not the issue here. The issue is not whether an immigrant woman or a woman who's the child of immigrants, of Puerto Rican descent, whether her life story is compelling enough for her to be the justice on the Supreme Court. Yes, it's heartwarming to see somebody do well from difficult circumstances. But does that justify the fact that now she has the qualifications to be the next Supreme Court justice? And what I believe, and what many conservatives now across the country are saying loudly and clearly, is that clearly if you look at her record, if you look, in fact, at some of her rulings, if you look at her character, and most importantly, if you look at her radical socialist worldview, she is not fit to be the next justice on the high court. She is not fit to sit among the other eight justices currently on the Supreme Court. And here is the reason why. This is a woman who has been steeped throughout her entire career in radical identity politics. She is at her core a milquetoast Marxist. She is somebody who consistently, ruling after ruling, has been radically pro-environment, has been pro-affirmative action, has literally been a mouthpiece for the trial lawyers. And to me, what is most disgusting And what is most disheartening and most threatening to the future of this country is she is a person who places her Hispanic heritage, her race, and her gender above her American identity. What she said as follows in a speech at Berkeley, California, which naturally it had to be in Berkeley, California, because frankly, that's where all the left-wing crazies are. In 2001, she said in Berkeley, California, and this speech was then reprinted in the Berkeley Law Journal of La Raza. She said, and I quote, "Justice Sandra Day O'Connor has often been cited as saying that a wise old man and a wise old woman will reach the same conclusion in deciding cases. I am not so sure that I agree with the statement," Sotomayor said. "First, there can never be a universal definition of wise. Second, I would hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male who hasn't lived that life." Now, my friends, there's no other way to say it. She is a racist. She is, at her core, a liberal fascist. She is somebody who puts blood and race and identity and gender above her American identity. She puts that above her judicial temperament. She is somebody that is saying, essentially, that she, as a Latino woman, can reach better conclusions than a white male. Now, this quote I'm sure you've heard quite often over the last day and a half. But what you haven't heard was that later on she said this, and this is classic racialism. Literally, you can take it out of Mein Kampf, except put in Latino and woman instead of Aryan or German. She said that if you look at blacks, if you look at Latinos, if you even look at women or Asians, that their logic and their reasoning is inherently different because, as she put it, of their physiological and cultural differences. In other words, their culture, their physiology, their racial identity and gender identity trumps everything else, and it determines and defines who they are as human beings. This is cultural Marxism at its very worst. This is liberal fascism. This is an attempt now by the radical left to subvert the American Constitution, to say that precedent, to say that what's written in the law, what's actually written in the Constitution, that does not matter, or that takes a back seat. What truly matters is one's personal experiences, that she comes from a Puerto Rican family, that she's of Hispanic descent, that she's a woman, that she comes from a single mom, that she knew poverty, that she grew up in the Bronx near Yankee Stadium. That's more important than her legal mind, or than logic, or than reasoning, or than what's in fact written in the law. And this, my friends, flies against 200 years of legal history in this country. This is an attempt by the radical left to literally impose identity politics upon the United States. And I am not surprised that Barack Obama chose her, because if you looked at his campaign for the presidency in 2008, what did he do but play the race card? What did he do but play the victim card? He kept saying again and again, one of the major reasons why he should be elected president of the United States was because he was African American, was because of his biography, was because of his life story. And he hid the fact that he was a stealth socialist, that underneath, beyond the supposed moderation and pragmatism, that underneath, he was a hard-boiled transnational socialist whose objective and goal, ever since he got into the White House, has been to transform the United States into a European nanny state. And my friends, make no mistake about it. I have been in Washington now for over 10 years. I have covered politics for nearly 20 years. I have seen many people come and go in this city, including Bill and Hillary Clinton. And let me say this about the Clintons. They were gangsters through and through. And they were also radical left-wingers. But I have never seen anybody with the ambition, the arrogance, and the hubris of Barack Hussein Obama. He is not President Obama. He truly is Comrade Obama. He is somebody who, if you look at him piece by piece, is implementing a sweeping socialist revolution. And Sonia Mayor is a central pillar of that socialist revolution. This is now part of the liberal onslaught on America. And what she represents is exactly the kind of identity politics that she and Barack Obama were steeped in when they were both in law school. This is part of the Marxist assault upon our legal traditions, upon our economic system, and ultimately upon our social life and our politics. She is somebody, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, will vote radically pro-choice. She will be a key vote on the Supreme Court to uphold Roe v. Wade. She will champion gay marriage. She will champion affirmative action. She will champion euthanasia. She will make sure that every one of Obama's initiatives, from nationalizing the healthcare industry, to giving amnesty to illegal immigrants, to nationalizing the automakers, to nationalizing the banks, to nationalizing the insurance sector, that every one of those measures will be protected and upholded in court. And most importantly, she will do what liberal justices have been itching to do for decades. She will use foreign countries' legal systems as justification for her rulings on the high court. She will look to France. She will look to Germany. She will look to China. And she will even look to the Middle East to justify her rulings on things like anti-terror policies, on Guantanamo, on how we can interrogate terrorists, right down the whole line. This is what they have been dreaming of for decades, because at their core, what cultural Marxists like Sotomayor truly believe is that America is a racist, sexist, homophobic, and misogynist society. That we are an imperialist nation at heart. And that the world, not America, is better than we are. That we are not a force for good, but the world is. And this is exactly Barack Obama's ideology and worldview as well. Now, he, in fact, hinted that he was going to nominate somebody like Sotomayor during the campaign. Boys, let's play clip 7.
We need somebody who's got the empathy to recognize what it's like to be a young teenage mom. The empathy to understand what it's like to be poor or African-American or gay or disabled.
There you go. He wanted somebody who had empathy. He wanted somebody who knew what it's like to be either an African-American or a minority or poor. And that's what we got with Sotomayor. And so my question to all of you out there in the Savage Nation is this. Should empathy be the defining criteria for our Supreme Court justices? Does compassion and personal experience trump logic, reasoning, and what's written in the Constitution? Is Sotomayor a moderate, or is she in fact a radical socialist who will tilt the Supreme Court even further to the hard left? This is Jeff Kuhner, filling in for the legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. We'll be right back after this break.
Court of Appeals is where policy is made. And I know, this is on tape, and I should never say that because we don't make law. I know. I know. I'm not promoting it, and I'm not advocating it.
Ha, ha, ha. That was Sonia Sotomayor at Duke University, essentially spilling the beans, basically admitting that she is going to be an activist judge, that she believes in judicial imperialism and judicial tyranny, that she essentially believes, as most liberals do, that the role of the Supreme Court and the role of the courts in general is to make policy. It is to legislate. It is not to just simply interpret the law and implement the law, but it is, in a sense, to define and transform the law, to make it. And this, I believe, is fundamentally where conservatives should make their stand. They should say loudly and clearly that Sonia Sotomayor, because of her judicial philosophy, is not fit to be on the high court. She doesn't possess the temperament. She doesn't possess the character. She doesn't possess the worldview to be seated in the highest court of the land. I want to hear from all of you. 1-800-449-8255. That's 1-800-449-8255. You're listening to Jeff Kooner sitting in for the legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. Let's go to Rooney in Hartford. Rooney, you're listening to the Savage Nation.
Thank God I'm listening to you on the Savage Nation, because I will say on behalf of millions of your listeners that there is nobody who is better prepared on this nomination than you are. And you have prepared a monologue at the beginning of your show that is unrivaled by anybody talking on the radio today or since this nomination has been made. You've exposed not only the nominee for the abomination that she is, but you've also exposed and described the Clintons as the thugs that they are. And you've also pointed out that Obama is not a president. He's a comrade-in-chief. And this nomination is a disaster. And if it's going to be exposed and debated, and if it's going to be held up in any way, shape, or form for any amount of time, you are the one who is going to get as much credit as anybody else for it, because you have nailed it, my friend. I've never heard of you, and I don't know where you came from, but I would be careful if I were you.
Thank you, Rooney. Rooney, thank you so much for that call, my friend. I appreciate it. My friends, I'm just speaking from the heart here. I mean, I've been at the Washington Times for years. I've been following, frankly, not just judicial confirmations. I follow American politics and foreign policy on a regular basis, and I'm just calling it the way I see it. You look at Sotomayor, you look at what she said, you look at what she stands for, you look at Obama and what he says and what he stands for. This is a form of cultural Marxism. And I think the question that we have to ask ourselves as Americans is, do we want this country to be radically transformed? Do we want to see socialism come to America? You know, do we want to see affirmative action completely entrenched in law? Do we want to see 50 million unborn babies slaughtered on a regular basis? Do we want to see marriage fundamentally overturned? That's the question. We'll come back with a lot more after the break. You're listening to Jeff Kooner filling in. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is off today taking some much-needed R&R, but he will definitely be back and in top form as always tomorrow. Should Sonia Sotomayor be the next Supreme Court justice? Should Republicans and conservatives put up a fight and perhaps filibuster it? Do you think empathy should be the defining characteristic for a Supreme Court justice? Or should, things like logic and reasoning and actually interpreting the Constitution be more important? I want to hear from all of you. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. And for all of you listeners out there, you can also go to michaelsavage.com. An absolutely superb website where some of Michael's favorite stories are posted every day. There's some excellent stuff on Sotomayor, including the fact that she's been reversed 60% of the time by Supreme Court on some of her rulings as an appeals court judge. And also some other very interesting stories regarding North Korea threatening an armed strike against South Korea and the United States. Things are heating up on the peninsula in Korea, and we're going to actually talk about that a little bit more at the next hour. But right now, we are talking about Sotomayor. I want to get to some of the calls. Let's go to Jerry in Chicago. Jerry, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I hope that Sotomayor doesn't believe that the appeals court, or Supreme Court anyway, makes policy, but if what she supports is that the burden of proof is on government to show why a right doesn't exist and not the individual, and she takes a strong stance on individual rights of the Ninth Amendment, which guarantees rights not previously enumerated in the previous Bill of Rights, yeah, then I would support her, because I want a justice who supports strong individual rights and don't take a narrow view of rights. I believe our founders wanted our country to guarantee a broad view of individual liberty. Now, if that's what she means.
Jerry, hold on. Let me just ask you this right now. I mean, do you honestly believe that the founding fathers would not recoil in utter disgust at somebody like the judicial philosophy of Sonia Mayor. Here is somebody who has openly said that she will use her gender and her race as key defining characteristics to make decisions that will affect the most fundamental aspects of our lives. I mean, and Jerry, this is the point I want to stress to you and to all of our listeners. This is not some low-level judge or some low-level appointment. This is somebody that will be sitting on the highest court of the land. There are only 9 justices. They will determine the most fundamental policies that will determine everything, how you raise your children, whether unborn children can be protected or they'll be murdered, the very definition of marriage, the very definition of what will apply in the workplace, whether we'll all be equal under the law or whether we'll start counting people's race and counting people's gender and counting people's sexual orientation. I mean, you can go after issue, whether we can protect our borders, whether we can interrogate terrorists. This is the kinds of issues that they're going to be dealing with. And if you look at somebody like Sonia Mayor, this is not even me saying this. These are her liberal colleagues who have worked with her and know her for years. Even they say that she is incompetent, that she doesn't possess the intelligence, and more importantly, she's a bully. Because like every liberal out there, she is fundamentally a thug. Because she truly believes in her heart of hearts that ideology trumps our Constitution. That ideology trumps experience. That ideology trumps the basic fabric of this country. She is a judicial revolutionary. Make no mistake about it. And that's why Obama chose her. And what you are now seeing with Sonia Mayor is literally the vanguard of the socialist revolution. Obama is remaking the auto industry. He is going to remake our national health care system. He is going to remake our borders and our immigration policy. We are slowly going down the road to a social democracy in this country. And now through her, he is going to try to transform the Supreme Court. This is what, to me, it is so obvious to me. And I'll tell you something else about Obama. And I have to be very frank because, Rooney was very kind to me, a caller before, about me sort of calling out the Clintons. Well, I have to say this about Barack Obama. Conservatives are making one fundamental mistake. They truly believe in their heart of hearts that this man is a vacuous individual, that he is a political and intellectual lightweight. And here is where I disagree with them. He is wrong. I believe he's not only wrong, but fundamentally immoral and even evil in his worldview. But what he is not is he is not a political lightweight or an intellectual lightweight. He is a heavyweight. And here is why. He defeated the most well-organized political machine I have ever seen in my life, namely Hillary Clinton. He has put the media in his back pocket. And now he is systematically implementing a sweeping revolution. He is leading a liberal juggernaut on Capitol Hill. And they are racking up one victory after another. And look at him now. Everything with him is political. He sat around with his backroom boys, people like Rahm Emanuel and some of his other buddies, David Axelrod and some of the other boys that he brought in from Chicago. And they sat around and they said, okay, we're going to get a cultural Marxist. We're going to get a hard left winger to go on the Supreme Court. But we're going to get somebody who's a woman and who's a Latino and an Hispanic and a Puerto Rican. And somebody who comes from a very poor background, a disadvantaged background. And we're going to throw her out there. And we're going to dare the Republicans. We're going to dare them to stop her or filibuster her. If they stand up to her, they're going to come across as racists. And they're going to alienate the fastest growing voting bloc in this country, namely the Hispanics. But if they acquiesce, if they stand back, if they show themselves to be the gutless, spineless cowards that most of them are, then we have what we want. We have somebody who's not just going to replace David Souter. See, this is what I keep hearing from Fox News all the time. Oh, it's a wash. Sonia Mayor is just going to replace David Souter. Yes, she's a liberal, but she's a mild liberal. She's somebody who's just going to keep the ideological balance on the court slightly tilted to the liberal side. No, she's not. This is not a wash. She's not just 15 years younger than David Souter. She's a hard left winger. She's to the left of David Souter. She practices identity politics. She supports a radical socialist environmental pro-affirmative action agenda to a degree that would even stun some of her liberal colleagues. And this is why even some liberals are saying she is not only incompetent, she is too far to the left. And so this is why I'm urging all of my listeners out there, all of you out there in the Savage Nation, who did this country proud when you stood up against the United Emirates, the Dubai ports deal, where all of you stood up and said no to amnesty for 20 million illegal immigrants. When brave people like Michael Savage were out there saying, no, we will not see our country go the way of Europe. We will not see our forefathers and their rich heritage and their rich patrimony literally squandered and frittered away. But we will stand up and we will fight for what is dearest and what is best in this country. Conservatives now, we're going to find out what we're made of. We're going to find out if we have the guts to stand up to the most radical left-wing nominee the Supreme Court has ever seen. This is now the question that's before us. And I believe, I truly hope, that this audience and that the conservatives in this country are going to find the courage that they demonstrated on illegal immigration, what they demonstrated on the Dubai ports deal, and what they demonstrated again and again for the last 20 to 25 years. Because believe me, my friends, this is no ordinary Supreme Court pick. Let's go to Leon in New York. Leon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Mr. Cooner. First of all, I couldn't agree more with your appellation of Obama as evil in his worldview, evil in every view, actually, and the brilliance that his advisors or handlers or whatever aided him in knocking off the gangster Clintons. But I want to just remind you of a call last night to Michael from a black listener who basically agreed with everything. He's listened to him for several years. That Michael has espoused. And I'm sure, and I know personally, many Asians, blacks, and Hispanics who had to work for a living and had to bring themselves up, had to, use their bootstraps to get from a difficult situation to a good situation, who agree with what Michael says, and who are not, Obamaites, and who would definitely oppose the radical Marxist espousements of Sotomayor. And I think you were very accurate in saying the words racist, sexist, misogynic with respect to her. You know, I have no, it's not up to me to say why she divorced this and that, but like you said, she bases many of her decisions not upon judicial acumen, but rather on her basic feelings of how she grew up and, you know, what she is with respect to her social and cultural background. And
Leon, you hit the nail, my friend. You hit the nail right on the head, and I want to thank you for that call. My friends, Leon has it completely right. We're looking at somebody here who clearly puts race, gender, and identity above what is written in the law, above precedent, above legal reasoning, and most importantly, about what's in the Constitution. And, you know, look, yes, she has a compelling life story. I mean, who can deny that? I mean, can anybody deny that? Yes, I mean, my heart goes out to her. Look, let me be very honest with you, and let me be very frank with all of you. My parents fled communist Eastern Europe. My grandfather was put in a concentration camp for 3 years. When he came to the New World, he knew what America stood for. He knew the freedom and the opportunities and the liberty that we have here and how we take it for granted and how special it is. So I know when I hear her personal story, I go, amen. But there's a fact that somehow we as Americans are not willing to confront anymore. And it's simply this. Some people should not rise above a certain level because they don't deserve it. Yes, she may be smart. How can you deny it? She went to Princeton. She graduated from Yale. Fine. But you know, what's wrong with just being a lawyer or just being a low-level judge? There's nothing wrong with that. There's no dishonor in that. But now, all of a sudden, because of her biography, how does that determine the fact or dictate that somehow she should sit on the highest court of the land? No, I'm sorry. Yes, you may be smart, but to be a Supreme Court justice, you have to be brilliant. You have to be a legal genius. You have to be somebody who's immensely well-read in the law. Somebody who truly understands the intricacies of the Constitution. Why our founding fathers crafted it the way they did, what their motives were, what their designs were, what their desires were, and base that upon precedent. You have to have somebody of the highest qualifications. By their own admission, Jeffrey Rosen wrote a devastating piece in the Liberal New Republic magazine. This is not Jeff Kooner from the conservative Washington Times, or even, I don't want to speak for Michael, obviously, but Michael Savage was brilliant yesterday in the way he cut up her nomination. It's not just conservatives that are saying this. Liberals are saying she doesn't have the intelligence, she doesn't have the gravitas, she doesn't have the wherewithal. She doesn't have what it takes to be a Supreme Court justice. She is not qualified. Now, look, God bless her mother. God bless her stepfather. God bless her brother who became a doctor. Listen, your story is an American story. And we treasure that. And we value that. And it's all that is the best in this country. But you are not worthy to be a Supreme Court justice. There are only 9 that can sit on the high bench. These are legal eminences. They are the finest minds in our country. We used to know that before. Now, under liberalism for the last 30 years, suddenly, if you've noticed, everything now is she a woman? Is she a person of skin color? Does she come from this background or that background? Since when? Since when did we become like the Balkans? Since when are we going to balkanize ourselves and pit one group against another? I'm sorry. I'll be very honest with you. I don't care if you have 9 finest legal minds in this country on the Supreme Court. I don't care what your race is. I don't care what your gender is. I don't care what your skin color is. I don't. I really believe we are all children of God. But what I do care about are your qualifications, your intelligence, your reasoning, and your temperament. And I'm sorry. I said it for Obama, and I will say it now for Sotomayor. Obama was carried by the White House press corps. He did not have the experience. He did not have the talent. He did not have the capabilities, or frankly, even the worldview, I believe, to be an effective commander-in-chief. And he's proving it. And now the same thing is with Sotomayor. But just as they played the victim card, as they played victimology and race politics, they're going to do the same thing now with Sotomayor. And now is the time for conservatives and Republicans to say clearly and unequivocally, no, in America, we judge you by the content of your character, not by the color of your skin. This is the most American of all creeds, and we as conservatives will fight for it, and we will stand with it all the way. I'm Jeff Kooner, filling in for the great Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. We'll be right back after this message. Savage.
I think, you know, in a certain sense, this is a referendum on the future of the Republican Party, because she is a moderate. She's had a lot of experience. She does represent diversity. And they're going to have real trouble opposing her. And if they let the 5% at the extreme right oppose her and lead them to oppose her, it's going to hurt them.
That was Senator Charles Schumer, one of the key leading Democrats in the Senate. Basically giving away the Obama team's strategy. I mean, there it is, daring the Republicans. Do you want to oppose her? Go ahead. And it's going to cost you a lot of Hispanic votes. Obama is playing political hardball. He thinks he's boxed the Republicans in. And now the question is, will the Republicans fight back, or will they simply cower away as they usually do and allow this liberal steamroller to continue going? My friends, let me be very honest with you. Knowing the Republicans as I do, having spoken to them, knowing how they've behaved in the past, they will just lie down and take it. And we will have another very radical Supreme Court justice on the Supreme Court, perhaps the most radical in our nation's history. But Obama, the empathizer in chief, he's made no secret about his love for empathy and how that determines who our next Supreme Court justice should be. And here he is. Boys, roll the clip.
There might be two rights or two wrongs, and you've got to try to resolve them. And there, the question is, what's in the person's heart and their gut, not just what's in their head? And what I want are people on the bench who have enough empathy, enough feeling for what ordinary people are going through, that they're not just in a bunch of abstractions up there, but they're focused on, you know, what does this really mean?
Well, I mean, the question I have for Barack Obama and for Sotomayor is, where is the empathy for Frank Ritchie, the New Haven firefighter, who, you know, did extremely well on his promotion exam, along with the other 18 firefighters, clearly should have been promoted, worked extremely hard, but was denied promotion because he was white. Well, what many in the press have not told you is Frank Ritchie, this gutsy, decorated fireman, was dyslexic. He is somebody who literally spent $1,000 of his own hard-earned money, quit his second job, spent hours reading into audio tapes so he can take that test because he wanted to better himself. He broke his back. He risks his life every day putting fires out, and then he gets stabbed in the back by people like Sotomayor because he's not the race color. He's not the right color, and they're not race for her. Where's the empathy there? That's the question I have for Sotomayor and for Barack Obama. We'll be right back. You're listening to Jeff Kuhner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is taking today off for some much-needed R&R, but the living legend will be back tomorrow doing his usual fantastic work. We've been talking about Sonia Sotomayor and is she fit to be the next Supreme Court justice. We're going to continue to talk about that, but we also want to talk about some other very important issues. You can go to michaelsavage.com. To look at other stories. North Korea is threatening to strike South Korean and even American warships. Things are heating up on the Korean Peninsula. You also have some very important stories regarding developments in California and also regarding some of the culture wars in this country, in particular the issue of gay marriage, which, of course, is very hot out in the West Coast. But the issue, my friends, that I want to talk about, at least for a little bit of this hour, is the crisis with North Korea. Barack Obama came into office pledging a softer, more open, kinder, gentler approach. He was the political messiah who was going to sweep away the Bush years and literally make America loved again by the entire world. He says he was willing to open up his hand to the mullahs in Tehran, to the butchers in Beijing, and to that midget lunatic dictator in Pyongyang, Kim Jong-il. Well, Kim Jong-il took the measure of Barack Obama, and a few days ago shocked the White House and shocked the world by detonating a second nuclear device in a northeastern city, an underground explosive that was 10 times as powerful as the bomb that North Korea detonated in 2006. Here is Barack Obama talking about that detonation just a few days ago.
North Korea's nuclear and ballistic missile programs pose a grave threat to the peace and security of the world, and I strongly condemn their reckless action. North Korea's actions endanger the people of Northeast Asia. They are a blatant violation of international law, and they contradict North Korea's own prior commitments.
That's basically Obama in diplomatic speak saying he doesn't know what to do. He is now twisting in the wind and wringing his hands at the impotence of the United States on the world stage. Because I can tell you this, my friends, I have spoken to people in the Obama White House, and what my sources are telling me is they did not see this detonation, this nuclear test coming. It shocked them, and they don't know how to deal with that Stalinist hermit regime in North Korea. This is a man who has now running one of the most repressive, ruthless, totalitarian regimes in the entire world. Kim Jong-il is 67. He is extremely ill. He is somebody who now sees his regime crumbling underneath his very feet. His people are starving. Under his leadership, over 1 million North Koreans have starved to death. Within 15 years, these Stalinist butchers have done the unthinkable. They have literally shrunk the average size of the North Korean population by 6 inches. That's what a failure this man is. That's what a horror he has unleashed upon the people of North Korea. And yet, as this has been going on, as he enslaves his people and throws them into gulags and slave labor camps, he has imprisoned American journalists, which he is holding right now. He is helping to arm Iran in its bid to acquire a nuclear bomb, which it will use to destroy the state of Israel and complete the Holocaust that Adolf Hitler started in World War II. They have sent precious technology to Syria and, in fact, helped them build a nuclear reactor, which was destroyed by the Israelis in September 2007. This is a regime that engages in drug trafficking, money laundering, counterfeiting. If it's criminal, they have their hands in it. But most importantly, my friends, and this is what you're getting as an exclusive on the Savage Nation that you can't get anywhere else. What you've been hearing from the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN is that the key player in all of this is China. The Red Dragon is now the most powerful country in Asia. Its economy is now slowly rivaling that of the United States. They now have one of the largest and most powerful militaries in the world. North Korea is its puppet regime. And as Obama calls up Beijing and asks them repeatedly, can you please tell him to stop detonating nuclear bombs? They are not listening. They are deaf to Obama's appeals. And this is what the liberal mainstream media is not telling you. China could turn off the tap and literally destroy and pull the plug on North Korea's regime. Most of North Korea's oil, most of its resources, most of its electricity comes from China. Within a second, Beijing could snap its fingers and literally put the lights out all across North Korea. They could paralyze and cripple that regime overnight, but they won't. They won't for one simple reason, because Pyongyang and Kim Jong-il is a communist regime. And like fellow communists, they are brothers in arms. They are ideological allies. And this is the great story of our time. Just as Rome, under the Roman Empire, was obsessed with the Middle East, it was obsessed with what was going on in Persia, it was being attacked. Ultimately, the greatest threat came from the barbarians, from the East. This is exactly our challenge today, my friends. As we fight this war on terror, and we must fight this war on terror, our greatest long-term enemy is China. It gets stronger every day. It gets wealthier every day. It flexes its muscles every day. And the great story of our economic crisis right now is not that we're in a very severe recession, because America has gone through many severe recessions. It is that as we spend and borrow and spend and borrow, it is China that is buying up our debt. They are owning us. They own our bonds. They own our debt. And they are slowly buying up our country piece by piece. And as they buy us up, they own us. And now, literally, it is like mutually assured economic destruction. We can no longer now lean on the Chinese. We can't go to Beijing and say, you know what? You rain, cut it out, or we're going to come in there and we're going to fix it. They can no longer do that. Now, the American superpower, once bestriding the world like a colossus, feared by everybody, is now feared by no one, especially by the butchers in Beijing. They look at us and they see weakness. And this is not just Jeff Kooner's opinion. Let me be very frank with all of you, my friends. We had some wonderful Chinese dissidents come over to the Washington Times a couple years ago. And I won't mention his name because now this guy's returned to Hong Kong to wage democratic guerrilla war against the regime there. He wants to expose their authoritarianism, their repression, and their numerous human rights violations. But he walked up and we had an editorial board with him. And I remember, I'll never forget the look in his eyes. He said, do you know what the Chinese leadership is up to? Do you read the official papers? Do you listen to the official radio? They want to bury you. They say again and again that they are now the center of the universe, that they will be the next superpower, that our days are numbered, that they are buying up our debt, that they are attracting massive foreign investment. They are trading with us, not because they want to cooperate, but because they want to get wealthier and more powerful. And eventually they want to dominate Asia and then the world. Because in their eyes, the only obstacle that stands in their way is you, is America. Because they know in 1989, in Tiananmen Square, when those students came out and they saw communism and one regime toppling after another all across Eastern Europe, they sensed this was their time. This was their chance, maybe their only chance, in their nation's long and proud and tragic history to seize freedom. And they rose like the courageous patriots that they were. And when they rose up and Beijing sent in those tanks and mowed them down like dogs in the street, did they look to Confucius or did they look to some of their other Democrats in their history? No. They put up a small version of the Statue of Liberty and they read from Thomas Jefferson's Declaration of Independence. They look to us. Because we are not just the military leader of the world. We are the spiritual, moral, and ideological leader of the world. They look to us for leadership. And George Bush, the first George Bush, and his criminals in his White House, they turned a blind eye to those brave, courageous patriots. And they did nothing, literally nothing, as they were butchered in the streets and many of them thrown into gulags, broken and tortured in the prison cells all across China. Yet these same Chinese communists who oversaw the massacre in Tiananmen Square are now running the modern day China. And they fear democracy. And they fear human rights. And they fear a free press. They are afraid that freedom will be the end of their power. So clinging to power desperately, they are supporting Iran. They are supporting Syria. They are supporting Russia. And most importantly, they are supporting North Korea. And my friends, I really want to stress this point to you. The issue in North Korea is not some obscure, faraway land where you're looking at, oh, here's another tin pot dictator who's detonating a nuclear device, big deal. Because the North Korean regime, what they did a couple days ago, they literally were advertising on the black market. What this was a sales pitch. It was to show the entire world, look at the kind of kiloton bomb that we can detonate. It is like Hiroshima or Nagasaki. You can take out New York or Washington if you like. And we have the ballistic missiles to back it up to deliver it. Give us your shopping list, we can fill it. Right to the last warhead. And they, if we are not careful, they will then send that missile or send a warhead to Iran, to Hezbollah, or to Hamas. They will sell it. And then they will use it either against Israel or launch it against the United States, New York, in Washington, or Chicago, or L.A. This is the real danger that we face. And this is what Obama and his liberal cronies in the White House cannot and will not ever understand. It doesn't matter if you have good intentions in your heart. It's like Sotomayor. It doesn't matter whether you have empathy and compassion. Kim Jong-il doesn't care about your empathy or compassion. He is a maniacal dictator. He has no compassion or empathy for his own citizens. He starves them to death. He literally grinds them into dust. If he doesn't care about his own people, you think he cares about us or about anybody else? And so what they need to understand in the White House is that what you are now seeing in North Korea is a threat to the security of the world, and they pose a clear and present danger. But does anybody have the guts to stand up in the Obama White House? I don't think so. This is Jeff Kuhner filling in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. Should we do anything about North Korea? Can we do anything about North Korea? I want to hear from you. This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for the legend Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. We're talking about North Korea. Things are heating up on the Korean Peninsula. The Russian Foreign Ministry has just come out with a statement about the last 8 or 10 hours saying they fear a potential nuclear conflict between North Korea and South Korea. Pyongyang, the leadership in North Korea, has come out saying now that it's effectively going to potentially shoot at South Korean or American warships. It no longer recognizes the armistice with South Korea in 1953. And so Barack Obama, having campaigned on extending an open hand to dictators and rogue states around the world, is finding out when you give these kind of people an open hand, they will punch you in the face. And we are now literally getting punched in the face. And now the question I have for all of you out there is there anything the United States can do? Is there anything the United States should do regarding the escalating situation on the North Korea, on the North Korea situation, and on the Korean Peninsula in general? 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. I recommend all of you out there also go to michaelsavage.com. There are some great stories, actually sizzling stories, not just on the North Korea issue, but also on Sotomayor and the whole gay marriage debate in California and the decision by the Supreme Court to uphold Proposition 8. So a lot of very good stuff on the website. Please go out there and check it out because Michael's got some great stories. MichaelSavage.com. We'll be right back after this break. This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for the great one, Michael Savage on The Savage Nation.
We will work with our friends and allies to stand up to this behavior. And we will redouble our efforts toward a more robust international non-proliferation regime that all countries have responsibilities to meet. In this effort, the United States will never waver from our determination to protect our people and the peace and security of the world.
Savage.
This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is off today taking some much-needed R&R, but he'll be back in absolute top form, ready to go tomorrow. We are talking about the escalating situation in North Korea. As I said just before the break, the Russian Foreign Ministry has come out with a statement warning about a possible nuclear conflict between North and South Korea. Kim Jong-il and his cronies in Pyongyang have now stated clearly and unequivocally that they believe they are potentially at war with South Korea and with the United States, that if there is any attempt to enforce sanctions on them following their nuclear tests, they will shoot on South Korean warships and on American warships. Things are in a heightened state of alert. There is a growing, escalating crisis on the Korean Peninsula. But hey, my friends, don't worry, because according to the liberal mainstream media and all of the fawning, sycophantic press corps in Washington, everything is fine. The Sun King Barack Obama can do no wrong, will do no wrong. There is no problem whatsoever. Our political messiah will deliver peace wherever he goes. And hey, according to Barbara Starr at CNN, what is the big deal? They fire missiles. America fires missiles. What's the problem? Guys, let's play clip number 18. You won't believe this. Roll it, boys.
These are the kind of missiles that the U.S. fires off all the time on training ranges. It's fairly routine. It got a lot of attention this week because it came at the same time as that underground test and the ratcheting up of North Korean rhetoric. In and of itself, the short-range missiles really are of no significant concern.
Can you believe that? That is Barbara Starr on CNN talking about the recent missile test and nuclear test in North Korea. You know, this is what blows me away about the liberal press corps. And, you know, my friends, I know this because I work with them. I see them. I interact with them on a daily basis. What you are now seeing is a systematic effort and cover up by the Washington press corps and by the liberal media to prop up Barack Obama and downplay this situation. They don't want to tell you how bad it is. No, what they're telling you is, hey, we fire tests, they fire tests, we try missiles, they try missiles. It's a short-term ballistic missile. What's the problem? Well, I'll tell you, Barbara Starr, what the problem is. Number one, we are the greatest democracy in the history of the world. When we fire a ballistic missile or when we test a missile, it's for defensive purposes or it's to prevent aggressive war. When a rogue state like North Korea tests a missile, it's because they plan to use it on their neighbors or ship it or sell it or send it to one of our enemies. That's problem number one, Barbara Starr. Problem number two, Barbara Starr, is that with North Korea, they mean what they say. It's not just heated rhetoric. Now, I have this question for Barbara Starr. They've already tested a long-range ballistic missile that could potentially hit the continental United States. What if they sell a short-term ballistic missile, I don't know, say to Hezbollah or Hamas, which they then smuggle into this country, or use it off a rusty merchant ship, or on a pickup truck, and then fire that with a nuclear warhead, say, I don't know, into Washington or New York, or maybe even Los Angeles? What does she have to say to that? It is completely irresponsible and reckless for the mainstream media to try to claim that everything is okay on the Korean Peninsula, that this is just a couple of Yahoo conservatives getting a little bit overexcited about what's going on there. This is a man who has threatened his neighbor, who threatens to invade South Korea, who now is threatening to shoot on American warships, who has systematically starved and repressed his people, who leads one of the most dangerous regimes in the history of the world, who is forging alliances with Iran, with Venezuela, with Hamas, with Syria, with our most avowed and committed and devoted enemies. And this man flagrantly violates international law. thumbs his nose at the United Nations, thumbs his nose at the United States. We had warned him a month ago. Barack Hussein Obama, Comrade Obama, one comrade to another comrade, said to him, stop it with the missile tests, when they tested one in April. And they basically told him to go fly a kite. They have humiliated the United States, and they have humiliated this president in the eyes of the world. And more importantly, my friends, and there is no escaping this conclusion, what we are now seeing is the slow unraveling of Obama's foreign policy. Appeasement doesn't work. Diplomacy not backed by force or the threat of force is meaningless. They are scoffing at us. And this is just the beginning, because Iran is now taking notice. And what do the mullahs in Iran see? They see a weak, ineffective, divided international community. They see an America that literally just shouts out words and condemns from the State Department actions by North Korea, but doesn't do anything. We have become a toothless paper tiger. And this will invite even more aggression and even more instability, and this will embolden our enemies. This is just the tip of the iceberg. And so, had they followed, frankly, what Michael had recommended, rightly so, in April, when Pyongyang launched that first missile, I would have taken it out right there, right on the launching pad. I would have sent in our Air Force, or maybe off our warships, and I would have rained missiles on that launching pad, and I would have taken it right out. And that would have sent a signal to Pyongyang, to the North Korean butchers, and to the Chinese military dictatorship: you don't mess with the United States. When you start testing nuclear missiles, when you start testing nuclear bombs, you have now crossed the red line. This is now something that the civilized world cannot and will not tolerate. But to do that, that takes leadership. That takes courage. And that is something that President Obama doesn't have. This, you're listening to Jeff Kuhner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. I want to hear from all of you out there. 1-800-449-8255. What should we do regarding the situation in North Korea? Let's go to our lines. Apparently the phone lines are blazing. Let's go to Renee in Fort Lauderdale. Renee, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi. I want to say bravo to you, and I have the answer, I think. I think we should take them both out, both of them together, North Korea and Iran, together like they took our Twin Towers out, and say Mazel Tov, and that's it. Let's regain our crown.
Renee, I got to tell you, I'm a very happily married guy. I love my wife dearly. But if I wasn't married, I would ask for your phone number. I got to tell you, amen to you, sister. I mean, that is, look, you're completely right. I think that we should have been very aggressive with North Korea. We should have taken out their launch pad in April. This would have sent a signal to everybody around the world not to mess with the United States. And then I would go to the butchers in Iran, to the mullahs, the Islamofascists in Iran, and I would say, your days of encouraging suicide bombers to blow up Jewish women and children on school buses are over. Your days of calling for another Holocaust are over. Your days of enslaving your people are over. And either you stop your drive for a nuclear bomb, or we will take out all of your nuclear facilities. We will do to you what we did to Hitler's Germany. We will bomb you into the Stone Age. Because we stand for civilized decency. We stand for all that is right and good in this world. We are the United States of America, and we have nothing to apologize for. Let's go to Tori in Las Vegas. Tori, you are on the Savage Nation.
Excellent. What I think we should do, and well, with this leader, Kim Jong-il out of North Korea, they should have took that missile out the first time he tried to let one go. It should have been taken right out of the air, like you had said. But you give a guy like that an inch, he's going to take a foot. He's absolutely out of control. Definitely should have never lifted the sanctions off of him. We know how he gets his money. They put a freeze on the bank accounts where they're making Marlboro cigarettes or off a cigarette called name brand cigarettes. They're getting money from that, millions of dollars, through all sorts of illegal assets, basically illegal things that the country is doing to make money. Now, we can put a pinch on them in every way, not just a simple sanction. Sanction them in every way possible. And if, in fact, that they were to launch a missile at us, well, then you know what? That makes them the ones that started the actual war. That would be diplomatic on our part to, you know, put the sanctions on them. And like I said, you know, if they want to launch another missile, well, then I think we should absolutely take that missile out. And it's not a matter of if they're going to sell this, you know, any, these missiles to other nations or to these terrorists. It's absolutely a fact of when they're going to do it and if they haven't already now.
Tory, you nailed it. You absolutely nailed it, Tory. Bingo, and I want to thank you for that call. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And in fact, they're already doing it. And you nailed it. You talked about cigarette smuggling. It's much worse than that. They are smuggling heroin. They're smuggling cocaine. They are smuggling long-range ballistic missiles to Iran. Look, here's what you're not going to hear from the mainstream media. When they detonated their first nuclear bomb in 2006, Iranian technicians were on site to observe it. They wanted to see if North Korea had the technology and the expertise to produce a nuclear bomb. This didn't happen by accident. The Iranians want what the North Koreans are providing. And secondly, that bombing the Israelis did against the Syrian reactor in September of 2007, you didn't hear much of that in the mainstream press. And here's why. That reactor was built by North Korean nuclear scientists. They provided the reactor material. They provided the missile technology. And here's what's going on. Syria is a client state of Iran. It is a proxy of Iran. The Iranians are afraid of UN inspections and of an inspections regime. So they are outsourcing their nuclear capability development. And they were doing that in Syria. So basically, away from the eyes of the international community, away from the eyes of the United Nations, they were using that reactor in Syria to develop nuclear missiles. And what the mainstream media won't tell you is that the Israelis knew this. And I know this because Israeli sources have told me this, senior intelligence officials. And what they said was, this was a way for Syria to develop Iran's bomb. And that's why we took it out. But the key person was North Korea. They were the key player. So there is now a ticking time bomb. The only question now is, where is it going to come from? And, you know, Tory, you mentioned the frightening prospect, well, if we get hit by a missile. That is a price that, my friend, I think is too high to pay. This is where I think George Bush was right. I was a critic of Bush, like Michael. I think he was a big spending Republican. On domestic issues, I opposed him. Especially on amnesty for illegal immigrants. I think it was the low point of his entire presidency. But on foreign policy, he was right. He was right about the threat posed by Islamic fascism. He was right about the war in Afghanistan. He was right about the war in Iran. Now, where he dropped the ball was exactly on North Korea, because there he punted to the State Department. And there he practiced diplomacy and appeasement. And as we took them off the list of sponsors of terrorism, as we weakened our sanctions, did they reward that good behavior? Did Pyongyang say, okay, America now wants to give us a chance? Let's try to rebuild our economy. For God's sakes, let's try to feed our people. No, they accelerated their drive for a nuclear bomb. And Tory, you nailed it. You give an inch, they take an arm. If they launch a missile against the United States, it will be one with a nuclear warhead. It can take out Alaska. It could take out Los Angeles or Seattle. It will be a Holocaust on American soil. This is what we are potentially facing. And this is why I say again and again, politics is a serious business. The Oval Office is the most serious, solemn trust you can possibly have. And this is why I say again and again, America made a tragic mistake in 2008. We took a political neophyte, somebody who spent, 4 years in the United States Senate? Again, like Sonia Sotomayor, somebody who we elected on their biography because it made us feel good. We wanted to end the history of racism. We wanted to end the legacy of slavery. So let's elect an African-American as president, but let's not look too much into his background or his character or his worldview. This, the liberal press corps, like you saw earlier with Barbara Starr of CNN, they carried water for him. And this is why, when Iran does attack Israel, when there is a Holocaust in the Middle East, when it is consumed in a giant ball of fire, or God forbid, North Korea should actually smuggle out a nuclear bomb that's used on American soil, the question we will ask of the liberal press corps is this: where were you, the Fourth Estate? Where were you to hold this administration accountable? When he was in Reverend Wright's church, listening to that anti-American, anti-Semitic venom, why didn't you hold his feet to the fire? When you saw the connections to Bill Ayers, when you saw the connections to Resco and the sleazy politics in Chicago and all the corruption, why didn't you do something? When you saw him again and again hint that he was going to take this country upon a socialist road that no country can sustain, why didn't you push him and hold him accountable? You gave him pass after pass after pass. It will be an indictment not only of Obama, but of the entire liberal mainstream media. And my friends, let me be very frank with all of you. And I say this as somebody who works at the Washington Times and, frankly, who has a lot of friends who are journalists. I hold the mainstream media in contempt. I hold them in contempt because they have betrayed you. They have betrayed their trust to give you accurate, profound, serious, solid information. They no longer speak truth to power. They are literally PR hacks for the Democratic Party and the Obama administration. And you're now seeing the first signs of trouble in North Korea, but it will get much worse. I'm Jeff Kuhner, filling in for the great one, Michael Savage, on The Savage Nation. I want to hear from all of you at 1-800-449-8255. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to The Savage Nation. Savage.
States and the international community must take action in response. The record's clear. North Korea previously committed to abandoning its nuclear program. Instead of following through on that commitment, it has chosen to ignore that commitment. Its actions have also flown in the face of United Nations resolutions.
There's the great one, President Barack Obama, talking about the situation in North Korea. This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. You know, this is like an old song. You just keep hearing it again and again. It's just being sung by different people. Because guess what? A couple years ago, when North Korea tested its first bomb, guess what George Bush said?
Last night, the government of North Korea Peninsula conducted a nuclear test. The United States condemns this peninsula. We reaffirmed our commitment to a nuclear-free Korean peninsula, and the international community will respond. The United States will meet the full range of our deterrent, peninsula, and security commitments. We're working to confirm North Korea's claim.
Yep. Boy, we really showed them then, huh? Boy, George Bush really took it to them. You know, my friends, it's the same old story, and eventually, we're going to have to wake up to the fact that when you face these kinds of brutal, sadistic, totalitarian regimes, they only understand one thing and one thing only, and that's firmness. That's toughness. And the more you coddle them, the more you stand there and literally throw words at them with their bombast and their supposedly cheap rhetoric, what this does is it only encourages the likes of Kim Jong-il and President Mahmoud, I want a jihad. And my friends, we have to wake up to this fact. President Obama is now being emasculated on the world stage, and he's being shown for the fraud and phony that he is. I'm Jeff Kuhner, filling in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. We'll be right back after this break.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We're back on the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is off today, but he will definitely be back tomorrow. Michael, if you're listening out there, my friend, I just really want to thank you again for this wonderful opportunity to fill into your legendary big shoes and to talk to your wonderful audience. I can't tell you what an honor and a privilege it is, my friend, and I want you to know I am very grateful and extremely thankful for this just wonderful opportunity. We have been talking about the Sonia Sotomayor nomination to the Supreme Court. We've been talking about the escalating crisis in North Korea. My friends, I kind of want to change gears a little bit. We can still talk about that at the bottom of the hour, but I want to sort of talk about some other issues that are also extremely important. The situation in the Middle East is getting more serious by the day. If you go to michaelsavage.com, you can see some absolutely excellent stories about what's going on in the Middle East. And in particular, I want to recommend a very good piece by Dick Morris. Now, I've been in Washington, as I said, for over a decade. I cover politics extensively. I know a lot of people in Washington. And Washington, contrary to what people think, is really fundamentally a small town. It's, yes, it's a big city, obviously, but in terms of the political world, the journalism world, you're looking at no more than 20, 30,000 people. And so we all know each other quite well. Now, Dick Morris is the kind of guy to me that I think has done a lot of damage to the Republican Party over the years. He was President Clinton's top advisor. He helped Clinton after the 1994 Gingrich Revolution. He is somebody who brought about the really cynical and opportunist politics of triangulation. He's a man that, frankly, I don't respect. He's a political mercenary, a hired gun, and in many ways a political whore. And after he turned on the Clintons, he's now basically shilling for the Republicans. He is somebody who really, in many ways, has no ideological or moral core or any kind of real principles. Yet even a stopped clock is right twice a day. Even Dick Morris doesn't spend all of his time sucking the toes of black prostitutes as he's on the phone with President Clinton. Even he can turn out a decent piece once in a while. And on michaelsavage.com, you can actually see a very good piece by Dick Morris on the situation in Israel. And I think on this one, the old whore has it about right. Israel is now facing, I believe, an existential threat. Speaking to people in the Middle East, people who know the Iranian situation very well, and especially people in the upper echelons of the Israeli intelligence community and people in the political class, the Jews of Israel now believe that a second Holocaust is on the brink of happening. They are now staring at another genocide. They look at what is happening in Iran, and they see a Persian Nazi consolidate his grip on power. He now controls the media. He has the mullahs and the clerics behind him. He is now tightening his grip on the military. And now he has completely taken over Iran's nuclear weapons program. Over the last 5 years, Iran is now slowly and systematically driving to acquire a nuclear bomb. And as Ahmadinejad has said repeatedly, he wants to destroy Israel and wipe it off the face of the earth. And my friends, this is not just the kind of rhetoric you hear often from the Middle East. This is the point about Ahmadinejad. The analogy of Hitler, I believe, has been used and overused. Everybody is a Hitler. But sometimes history does repeat itself. And this man is as close to Adolf Hitler as we will ever see in our age. He is an unabashed racialist. He believes that the Persian people and the Muslim people are been put on this earth for religious and moral and cultural supremacy, that it is their destiny to not only dominate the Middle East, but to eventually create a world Muslim empire. Ahmadinejad was part of those revolutionary fanatics in 1979 that hijacked and occupied our embassy in Tehran and took our diplomats hostage. He was one of the kids, the students on the barricades, on the streets, chanting death to America. He was one of the shock troops for the Islamic Revolution of Ayatollah Khomeini. He is somebody who believes in radical Islam with every fiber in his being. But more than that, he is a revolutionary Shiite. He believes, and he has said this to people repeatedly, not just in public speeches, in private conversations with his family members, with close aides, with close advisors, and at numerous government functions, that he has been put on the face of this earth, he believes, by Allah himself to bring about an apocalypse, to bring about what the Shias call the 12th Imam or the hidden Imam, the person that will come back and literally inaugurate the beginning of the end of times. As he puts it, the world will be consumed in a great ball of fire. And in that fire will emerge a Muslim empire that will subdue and conquer the entire world. Just as Hitler spoke about Aryan supremacy and a world Nazi empire, Ahmadinejad talks about Persian supremacy and a world Muslim empire. And at the top of his list are the Jewish state and America. As he calls Israel, it is a stinking, rotten corpse, and its days are numbered. That he will complete what Adolf Hitler started. Except instead of throwing 6 million Jews into the gas ovens, he will unleash a nuclear holocaust, and he will burn them all up, devour them, consume them in one massive nuclear strike. And so now the Israelis are facing the most fundamental question that a nation or people can face. Shall we be or not be? Shall we exist as a people, or will this be the end of us once and for all? And now I have to speak to Jewish Americans in particular across this country. During the 1930s, have all of you forgotten history so quickly? Because everybody saw what was occurring in Nazi Germany. They saw Kristallnacht and the burning of Jewish businesses. They saw the armed bands being put on Jews with the label of the Star of David. They saw Jews being persecuted and books being burned, and systematically Jews being stripped of their rights and slowly being rounded up into concentration camps. And yet the world did nothing, and even American Jewry did not even lift a finger, most of them. They had a liberal democratic president then, Franklin Roosevelt, and they put their politics above their people and their race and their religion. And rather than helping their ethnic and religious brethren, who were literally, slowly being strangled to death in Europe, they stayed silent. And as many American Jews voted, and it broke my heart to see many American Jews in the November election vote for Barack Obama, even though they knew on the issue of Iran, he was an appeaser. Even they knew that he was the most anti-Israel president this country has ever seen. And I'm including Jimmy Carter in this. He's even more anti-Israel than Jimmy Carter. They voted for him. And now, it's not just me saying it. It's people in the upper echelons of the Israeli government, as Dick Morris points out in his column. They are now telling people in Jerusalem Post, in particular Carolyn Glick, who is an excellent columnist, a top-notch, world-class journalist, in private conversations, The Obama administration has resigned itself to a nuclear Iran. Yes, in public, Obama has come out and said there will be a deadline for negotiations by the end of this year. But in reality, that is just window dressing. He is telling the Israelis and Prime Minister Netanyahu, you have to learn to live with a nuclear Iran. And that he will blame not Iran, but Israel, should Israel launch a devastating attack to take out their nuclear facilities, Iran's nuclear facilities. In other words, the victim will be blamed, not the aggressor. Our only ally and democracy in the Middle East will be blamed, not the Persian Nazi state in Tehran. They will have Obama's backing and support. Mr. President, shame on you. Shame on you for betraying our closest friends and our closest allies. But my friends, look at the example of Israel. We talked about North Korea in the last hour. Look at the example of Israel. In 2007, as I mentioned, they took out the Syrian nuclear reactor and probably stopped Syria from acquiring a nuclear bomb. In the early 1980s, it was the Israeli Air Force that took out Iraq's top nuclear reactor and denied Saddam Hussein a nuclear weapon. Can you imagine if Saddam Hussein had a nuclear bomb when he invaded Kuwait in 1990? Can you imagine what would have happened? He would have used it. If not on the people of Israel, then certainly on the people of the United States. And what is the Israelis' thanks? They get knifed in the back, betrayed by their closest ally, the United States, led by Barack Obama. But I have news for the Obama administration. They may be turning on Israel. They may be urging and squeezing the Israelis to acquiesce to an Iranian bomb, to basically, literally, give up any control over their destiny and their very existence, and leave that into the hands of this Persian madman. But the Jews this time, as everybody in Israel has been telling me, to a man and woman, both right, center, and left, it goes across the political spectrum. This time, we will not go quietly into the good night. This time, we will not go silently into the ovens. This time, we will defend our state, we will defend our existence, and we will defend our very national honor. Because what is at stake is Jewish civilization itself. If Israel is wiped off the map, then Hitler will have truly won. But more than that, our fundamental outpost and bulwark of Western civilization will be smashed. Because as Ahmadinejad has said himself, once we go after the Jews, and once we get rid of them, we get rid of the little Satan. But then we move against the great Satan. Ahmadinejad is not content with just wiping Israel off the map. He wants to wipe America off the map. And this is why, my friends, we have to put maximum pressure on Barack Obama. And we have to tell him clearly and unequivocally that the United States this time will not allow another Holocaust to happen, because future generations will never forgive us. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Kooner sitting in for the legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Is Israel facing the end? Are the Jews facing another Holocaust from that Iranian Nazi? I want to hear from all of you out there in the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. Let's quickly take a call. Ben from Delaware, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that anytime Israel has come up against a big threat, and when they're forced into action, they have responded with brutal, lethal force every single time. They've done what they need to do, and then they've gone back to being peaceful. But when you wake the sleeping giant, he's going to get mad. And it's
Ben, I listen, I'll be very honest with you. What I've been hearing from my sources in Israel is that Netanyahu is going to tell Obama to fly a kite, and he's going to do what he has to do to defend the state of Israel. And that means we're going to be heading into a major military conflict in the Middle East. It will be something that will completely derail Obama's agenda. It will catch him completely flat-footed. And Iran, I believe, will break him the way Iran broke Carter's presidency. But the question I have for the American people is, the Israelis have the strength to do what they need to do. They have the courage and the guts. But what's happened to us? We, as Americans, we have lost our will to fight. I mean, to me, this whole issue, I mean, forget even the issue of Iran, which is so naked and obvious. I mean, here you have a madman who says he's been literally sent down by Allah himself to wipe the Jews off the face of the earth and to wipe America off the face of the earth. And he's going to consume it in a giant ball of fire. And they're pursuing nuclear weapons. All right. I mean, literally, South Park couldn't invent a more cartoonish character than this guy. And still Obama wants to talk to him. But forget something as obvious as that. We can't even interrogate terrorists anymore. Literally now, if you squirt water up a terrorist's nose for 20 seconds, that's torture. That's waterboarding. I mean, to me, when you see what is slowly happening to this country, how we are unilaterally disarming, there is no other conclusion. But we have lost our will to fight. We are becoming a mockery in the eyes of the world. And, you know, my friends, history has shown us this again and again. You look at the Roman Empire. It became too decadent, too frivolous, too immoral to even defend its very own existence. Rome collapsed, not from without, but from within. So you look at something like this whole issue of waterboarding, it's pathetic. I mean, you have a terrorist, we have him, squirt water up his nose, get some information from him. No, 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 the ACLU says you can't do it. It's pathetic. You're listening to Jeff Kuhner, sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. We'll be right back after this break.
Savage.
This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. If you want to call in, 1-800-449-8255. We talked a little bit about Israel facing extinction and another Holocaust just at the top of the hour. But I want to talk about very briefly what's going on with Chicagoland and Senator Roland Burris. Boy, it's never a dull moment in Chicago politics. You want to talk about the decline of the Roman Empire and moral decadence? Well, if you want to see how America is going the way of Rome, you got nowhere else to go but just go to Chicago, because that is a swamp of political corruption from which Obama came from. There's a recent FBI tape which has just been revealed, which shows that contrary to what Roland Burris said, he in fact did suggest giving a contribution to Governor Blagojevich's campaign fund in exchange for an appointment. Burris, in fact, repeatedly said that he was willing to give money, that he wanted an appointment. He knows it would look bad. He knows it would be seen as a conflict of interest. But there he is talking to Governor Blagojevich's brother, Robert Blagojevich. And, you know, there you have it. Again, the liberal mainstream press refusing to hold Roland Burris accountable, refusing to get to the bottom of the massive sordid corruption that you see in Chicago, which has now ensnared Blagojevich and could potentially widen and ensnare Burris himself. We have a couple of interesting clips. Here is Burris today. Boys, roll it.
I told everyone who would listen that I was interested in being appointed to the seat. Did I try to buy the seat? Never. While I wanted to keep my commitment to make a personal contribution, I did not, because of the perception of impropriety that might arise. Did I commit perjury? No. Have I stated the truth all along, before and after learning my conversations with the governor's brother were being taped? I also said I wanted the tapes and the transcripts to become public. I expect the media and the public to review every word of the transcript in context. And at the end of the day, I expect both to judge me fairly.
Yep, sure, sure. He just wants everybody to get to the bottom of this. He was upfront about this from the very beginning. He never wanted to pay to play. And, you know, he wants to get his side of the story out there, and he's as clean as a whistle. You know, sometimes I wonder if these politicians in Washington honestly think we're that stupid. I mean, do they, the contempt they must have for the intelligence of the American people. Honestly, it just shocks me sometimes. And I got to tell you, you know, working in Washington, living in Washington, what I can just tell you is this. At its core, this city is Hollywood for ugly people. It really is. It's a city where people are consumed by vanity, by fame, by power, and ultimately by media exposure. This is what they really live for. And, you know, at least the people in Hollywood, I'll give them this much, they take care of their bodies. I mean, sure, they're all a bunch of druggies and junkies, and everybody is sleeping with one another. It's a running soap opera. But, you know, hell, at least they're not grating on the eye when you look at them on television. But you look at some of these people in Capitol Hill and Congress, I mean, literally, it's Hollywood for ugly people. And, you know, they sound like mutants. They talk like mutants. They behave like mutants. They really think that the rules of life and the rules of ethics just don't apply to them. So, you know, here you have a guy on the phone with the governor's brother, who's in charge of Blagojevich's campaign fund, saying, hey, look, I really want this Senate seat. And either I'll write a check or one of my people will write a check. Hey, my top priority, as he put it, is helping Rod Blagojevich. Now, all of a sudden, no, it's all out of context. Me corrupt? No. Anyway, as the world turns in Washington, let's take a couple of phone calls. Dan from New York, you are on the Savage Nation.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I almost don't know where to start. You have run through every pathetic and failed conservative policy, particularly in foreign affairs, than anybody can wave a stick at, all of which, by the way, have been debunked. Let's start with Korea. And by the way, you just mentioned the issue of respecting life and ethics. Do you have any idea how many people live in Seoul, South Korea? It's 10 million. It's 30 miles from the DMZ. Within 10 or 15 minutes, they have calculated that there would be a million casualties in Seoul as a result of a North Korean attack. And you're sitting here as an armchair general and cavalierly sanctioning what sounds to me, unless I'm misunderstanding everything you're saying, that we need to go around the world annihilating everybody who presents a threat to us. Now, having said
Dan, look, you're doing exactly what liberals always do. With all due respect, Dan, you don't know what you're talking about. You paint a straw man. You create a straw man. Look, had we taken out that missile test launch in April, Kim Jong-il would not have detonated a bomb today. Now, nobody has said we should drop a nuclear bomb on North Korea. Nobody has said that we should wipe North Korea off the face of the earth. But what we should do, Dan, is we should stand up and tell this roguish thug that he can't start testing missiles and detonating nuclear bombs. And if we took out that missile in April, rather than standing around and just making speeches at the UN, right now we wouldn't have a North Korea literally armed to the teeth with a 10-kiloton bomb that it could use on an American city. Now, again, you go on and on about, you know, being an armchair general. You know, Dan, in the 1930s, when people like Winston Churchill and other conservatives were saying, rise up against this fascist dictator because he will bury Europe, literally bury it under a mountain of dead people and concentration camps. It was exactly liberal peaceniks like you that said, oh, you guys are just armchair generals. Well, the result was 50 million dead and a continent in tatters. When it was people like us that said repeatedly throughout the 1990s, Osama bin Laden and Islamic fascism is a gathering storm. You look at attacks on Somalia. You look at attacks on East Africa. That you attack, look at the attacks on Khobar Towers, the attacks on the 1993 World Trade Center. Where were you, liberals? You were marching lockstep and barrel behind Bill Clinton. It was appease, appease, appease. And then 9/11 happened. But that wasn't enough for you. And then we took out that fascist madman, Saddam Hussein. But that wasn't enough for you. No, America is the problem, not these fascist dictators. Well, I have news for you, Dan. You're living in fantasy land, my friend. That's the problem with all of you liberals. You stand there and you appease and appease and appease. Well, now we've been appeasing Kim Jong-il. What, we've been doing your game, Dan. It's been 8 years we've been negotiating and practicing diplomacy. Did that stop him? No. And you know what? You don't give a damn about the people in Seoul, South Korea. First of all, it's 11 million. It's not 10 million. So A, get your facts straight. Okay? But B, the government of South Korea, the democratically elected government of South Korea, they are saying we have to tighten sanctions. They are saying that North Korea poses a grave and serious threat to the stability of the peninsula and to the entire world. They are saying it is time to get tough. They are saying it is now time to bring this regime from within. You know, Dan, there are over a million people who have been starved to death under North Korea. They are rotting in the gulags. It is time now for regime change. And what we should do is we should help those poor people, and we should insist, as we should have done in 1989 in Tiananmen Square, we should aid those democracy activists and ask for them to overthrow this regime from within. But that takes guts and that takes courage. And frankly, that's something that President Obama never had, doesn't have, and I'm afraid never will have. Let's go to John from San Antonio. John, you're on the Savage Nation with Jeff Cooner.
Jeff, pleasure to speak with you. You and Mr. Savage are extreme patriots. I love you guys. I listen to your column weekly. I love it. Listen, you mentioned earlier in the last hour that the Obama administration did not see the nuclear test coming. It caught him by surprise. Well, you know, that's probably because the Napolitano clan and her NSA buddies have been too busy watching us right-wing extremists, you know, the 90% of us that listen to the Savage Nation that own guns. Well, here's something. I'd like to give back a little to the Savage Nation here because I want people to understand something here. The last Supreme Court ruling, actually, it was just a few months ago. It was a 5-4 decision. It was a 5-4 decision that said that we had the right to bear arms. Okay? And this Mr. Souter that's stepping down, he's one of the five that actually voted in our favor. You take him away and you put her in, this lady that Obama wants.
Oh, John, you completely nailed it. It's a game changer. I mean, there's no question about it. It's an absolute game changer. And this is my point. She is a milquetoast Marxist. She is somebody on the hard left, much further to the left than David Souter. And it's not just on gun rights. You're going to see it on issues like euthanasia, partial birth abortion, homosexual marriage. This is going to push this country further to the left. But look, I mean, let's cut to the chase. Barack Obama was a transnational socialist. That's the milieu that he grew out from. That was his training. He was a campus radical. He is somebody who was immersed, marinated in the church of Reverend Wright. He is somebody who's hung around with radicals and extremists his entire life. He clearly has a leftist revolutionary agenda for this country. Sotomayor is a centerpiece of that leftist agenda. And they want to take away your gun rights. They want to ensure abortion on demand. They want to murder babies as fast as they can kill them. They want to nationalize health care. They want to give amnesty to illegal immigrants. They want to literally disarm the United States against our enemies. They want to stop fighting the war on terror and essentially wave the white flag of surrender and appeasement. Because at its core, this is the thing that most Americans don't realize about liberalism. It is the ideology of suicide. It is literally the ideology of the culture of death, as the late Pope John Paul II said. And this is what liberals fundamentally believe. In the end, This is the big difference between conservatives and liberals. It's not just small government, low taxes, traditional family. More fundamental, it's this. Conservatives believe in the transcendental nature of man. In other words, that human beings are created in the image and eyes of God. And from that, that's where all of our rights flow. That is the innate dignity and equality and integrity of human beings. Liberals don't believe that. That's why they are at war against the Constitution and even the Declaration of Independence. Because it is right there in the Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal. They are endowed by their Creator with the inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This is the essence of the American project. This is the essence of the American dream. And this is the essence of American conservatism. We believe that this country is a fundamentally good and decent country, that we have been given the greatest constitution and form of government in the history of the world, and that the basis of this form of government is a belief in a creator. Now, you may be agnostic, you may even be atheistic, and still be a conservative if you say, look, I am personally an agnostic. Yes, I'm skeptical. I may even be an atheist. But I understand that a healthy, wholesome, normal society appreciates the power and the influence and the importance of religion. That religion is not a destructive, negative force. It's an ennobling force. It's an elevating force. It's what it drove our forefathers. You know, let me be very frank with you, John. I just came back from the GI Film Festival a couple of weeks ago. And it's a prominent festival in Washington. It's been getting more and more play every year. And there I met members of our military, Marines, service members, people in the Air Force, the Coast Guard, the Army, you name it, every branch. And they weren't there just to watch films. They were there to celebrate and get recognition for their sacrifices on the battlefield. And what they told me repeatedly was this: Jeff, what is wrong with our country? What is wrong with Barack Obama? They are not allowing us to win this war in Afghanistan or win the war in Iraq. We have sacrificed so much. We have shed so much blood. Many of these men, I mean, literally salt of the earth, 24, 25, 26, in the prime of their youth, they're walking around with canes, maimed. And everybody say, they all to a man said, America is God's country. It is God's people. We are a godly people. We do this because we fundamentally believe that all Americans are given by their Creator fundamental human rights. And we want to defend this way of life, whether it be in America, whether it be in Korea, whether it be in Iraq or Iran or wherever. And that is the spirit that built this country. And so in the end, if you look at somebody like Sotomayor, or if you look at Barack Obama, they are radical secular humanists. Man is their God. This is what they fundamentally believe at their core. They believe, no, we're not in the image of God, that we're there to live under His eternal rules and precepts. There is no such thing as a natural moral order. They literally believe we will not serve. Marriage is not between a man and a woman. Homosexuality is fine. Affirmative action is fine. Abortion is fine. You can murder a baby in the womb of a mother. That's fine. You can betray your country. That's fine. You cannot stand up for your borders. That's fine. You can be envious and tax your neighbor. That's fine. You can confiscate his property. That's fine. That is liberalism in a nutshell. And until Americans realize this, they are going to see America is not immune to the laws of history. We will go the very same way of the Roman Empire, or just look across the ocean to Europe. That is our future. And that is why we conservatives should stand up with one voice and say, no, we will not go quietly into the good night. We are the greatest country in the history of the world. And we will remain God's people now and forever. This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for the legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for the legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The 3 hours have just literally blown by. I can't believe how quickly they've gone. I want to thank all of my listeners out there. You guys were just wonderful, and I can't tell you what an honor it was to speak to all of you tonight. To Michael in particular, if you're listening, my friend, I want to thank you very much for this wonderful, wonderful, heartwarming opportunity. You truly are a very generous man, and I want you to know that not only are you a great man and a great radio host, but you're also a very generous and kind man, and I really appreciate the opportunity to have filled in for you tonight. It's a memorable experience, one that I'll never forget, and I just want to thank again all the listeners out there. You know, my friends, I just want to leave you with this. America has gone through so much, a lot of trials and tribulations, and this is obviously another very dark period. A very depressing period in its history. But America has always emerged stronger and tougher and better than anywhere. And to me, the principles that I live by are God, country, and family. I believe they are America's eternal principles, its historic principles, its essential principles. They have carried us and sustained us from the Revolutionary War of 1776 through the Civil War, through two world wars, throughout the Cold War, and now the War on Terror. If we stick to those principles, if we defend and advocate those principles and never betray them, I believe that in the end, as always, we will emerge victorious. Because in the end, we are right and the left is wrong. This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Thank you and good night and God bless America.
Savage.